For those of you who have been here a while this morning with us, and welcome to those who have joined us just for this session. It is with great pleasure that I'm going to introduce Dr. John Beasley Murray, who will be speaking about his and his students' contributions to Wikipedia and why he utilizes this kind of open access medium for student assignments and publishing articles. Dr. Beasley Murray is assistant professor in the Department of French, Hispanic, and Italian Studies at the University of British Columbia. His research areas include 20th century Latin American cultural, literary, and political history, Latin American left and socialist movements, example, Peronism, Sendero Luminoso, the FMLN, Chavismo, and their relation to violence and the state, amongst others. So, could you join me in welcoming Dr. Beasley Murray?
Hi, thanks very much. So we're a small, intimate, and elite grouping, so this can be informal, and feel free to interrupt me or shout out or ask questions or complain or denounce at any stage that you want. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what I do with Wikipedia. I'm also going to mention as well a little bit of what I do with blogs, which I've done for some time too. But mainly the Wikipedia thing, which, I mean, it seems to me obvious, is the world's largest and most successful open access knowledge project, and as such, also educational project, but is being almost sort of criminally ignored by most universities and educational establishments, and it seems to me that that's wrong. Instead, and this is where I get to give my little rant, we have proprietary software such as, WebCT, Blackboard, this kind of stuff, which dominates the educational technology. It dominates technology used in universities. It seems these are things which cost an immense amount. Strangely enough, Blackboard don't actually tell you on their website or anywhere exactly how much they charge to fit up a university. With their products. So I tried to do a little bit of research, but it wasn't immediately clear, although I did find out that Rutgers paid something like £300,000, $300,000 a year. And that's for licenses alone. I mean, forget about the salaries and personnel and so on. That is devoted to keeping up this kind of proprietary private technology, which institute new enclosures, which separate off students' experience of technology, of the internet, that they have in university, from what they have the rest of their time. It often, they try and mimic the kinds of things that you'll find elsewhere, discussion boards, chat forums, and so on and so forth. But in this closed off arena, which students only ever associate with class, to which students can't return after the semester's over, which has no there's no interface with a wider potential public, either for them to contribute or for them to read. It's almost a sort of definition of a kind of a closed access. The students feel it's kind of busy work that doesn't have much to do with anything. It is a kind of bizarre privatization or seclusion of higher education from public discourse. It seems to go against everything that the university stands for. If I were to be put in charge of this or any other university, I'd do a few things in my first week, but one of them would be to get rid of all these contracts. Hi.
In the old-fashioned university, there was tuition, and people didn't come and sit in your classroom.
Uh-huh.
How is this different?
Oh, well.
I mean, basically, that's a way of keeping the access to the teaching is selling it, basically, the business.
Well, in the newfangled universities, there's tuition as well, and a lot more than there used to be. The point is that there are these technologies, right, for opening things up. It's, for instance, it's like what they did with DVDs, for instance. I mean, video was the different video technologies grew up in different ways. So in France you had Seacam, in Britain you had PAL, in North America, you had what's it called, NC, whatever it is. So there were sort of organic reasons why visual images and video couldn't be shared very easily across countries, across borders, and so on and so forth. With the introduction of DVD, suddenly it was a possibility to do that. There was a new technological opportunity, which Sony and Philips and the other high-tech companies conspired to introduce this completely artificial series of regions, region 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on and so forth. So what you've got is here is this opportunity open to the university for it to regain its place, regain a sense of its purpose in the public sphere, and not merely as some sort of closed-off, ecclesiastical, monastical, elitist institution. And it has deliberately turned its back on that by erecting these electronic walls. I mean, it seems to me that's what open access is about, trying to prevent that, you know, trying to go against this logic, but it's become, you know, so ingrained. Those people who sort of work in libraries and work with journals and so on, you see the ways in which there are these opportunities all these journals online and PDF and so on, which financial interests and companies and corporations, however, are using that technology against the potential that technology itself has. I mean, again, my understanding of open access is that it is trying to work with those aspects of the technology that try and, you know, realize some notion that, you know, education, learning, and knowledge is not a privilege for a small group of people who have the money to pay, but is something that, you know, affects everyone, and to which everyone has some kind of claim or stake. Anyway, that's why in my first week I would undo the contracts for. But we can talk about that more at some point. But that's why I get rid of the contracts for WebCT and so on, or whatever they call it these days, Blackboard and stuff. So as I say, one of the first things that I did, and I've been doing for a few years now, is use blogs in my courses. It's kind of, really rather sort of simple stuff. Basically, it's an updated version of response papers. I used to get the students to write a page on their reading each week. And the classes I teach, I find them sort of fun and interesting, exciting, but they're not earth-shattering. There's mostly literature classes. For instance, one of the classes I'm teaching this semester is on colonial Latin American literature. I get the students every week to write what's meant to be more or less the equivalent of a page of paper. Online it's about 400 words, 300, 400 words. I ask them to write, which is their response, their thoughts, what they didn't understand, their questions and so on that they had to the reading. Before, when this is a paper-based system, they'd hand them in to me. I sort of read them, make the quickest of comments, and hand them back. In part, it's a sort of regulatory scheme. In part, it's sort of an incentive to get them to do the reading. But it's also it was also a means for me to have some sense of what they were thinking before we had the class discussions, and especially those who, for one reason or another, were less prone to speaking in class and so on. It was sort of another way in which they could raise issues that they had. The great thing that the blogs allow is for that for them to share these ideas amongst themselves. So it's not just a one way between them and myself. It becomes a more horizontal thing. So I also ask the students to comment on at least two of their fellow students' blogs. Of course, this is merely the way in which blogs work. It's using the technologies of blogs, which themselves sort of developed in one way or another, or have come to develop in some ways, like chats and lists and so on. The difference, of course, a blog being something owned by the person who writes it, and there's a sort of clear relationship between that person and the commenter. And I like the fact that with the blogs, unlike again with the proprietary software, the students have their own blog They can make it whatever color they want. They can make it black or pink or blue or green. They can choose whatever platform they want. Essentially, they can choose LiveJournal or Blogger or WordPress or whatever they want. They can choose whatever software they like. Doesn't make any difference to me, as long as it's up there and out there and I can read it. So this is the kind of thing that the educational technology tries to do, but just does badly, right? Does without reaping any of the advantages that the technology offers. But then the other thing I began to notice is that the blogs also offered a possible opening to what is essentially the new public sphere. I mean, when I started doing this, I still had to explain to some extent what blogs were. Nowadays, you don't have to explain to anyone what blogs are, you know, in the political arena, for instance, the US presidential election and so on, you know, everyone's talking about blogs and bloggers. Again, there's an attempt to sort of appropriate them by TV channels and so on. And to some extent, therefore, my students are participating in that. And although one could play that up more and work with that more, I don't. But even so, sometimes other people come in and comment on what they've written. And I guess it was most noticeable one time when I got students in this particular class, which is on human rights in Latin America. I got students to do a comment, not just on a read, they had to go out and find an article and write something about an article. And one of the authors of one of the articles that the students are commenting on, obviously Googled themselves, came in, found this student who had produced a rather trenchant critique of what they'd written, and responded. And there was a little to and fro. So this notion, again, that students are writing in public and what they what they write matters, or at least could matter. I mean, essentially, the blogs that on the whole they write, and again, they're on mostly kind of boring issues and topics, aren't major traffic blogs. But it didn't get me thinking a little bit. Which is, I guess, where we get to Wikipedia, because Wikipedia is not a low-traffic blog. It is, these things change slightly every now and then, but it's certainly one of the top 10 sites on the internet. I think I worked out it's probably number 7, something like that. 10% of global internet users go to it in any particular day. 684 million visits per year. 2.5 million articles. I mean, it's a sort of any time, as you know. Again, I don't have to explain Wikipedia to you. I'm sure you know. You type something in Google, the top hit is as likely as not going to be Wikipedia. And as such, it's also it's a kind of a massive feature on the internet landscape. But it's also, of course, a Web 2.0 classic in that, of course, all the content that is provided by Wikipedia is provided by the users themselves. This was, you know, the sort of founding moment of Wikipedia. These two guys got together, thought, wouldn't it be nice to produce an encyclopedia? And to start, it was going to be written by experts, and they were going to hire people and so on. But then they realized that this would take many years. So it was a sort of side project, one of them suggested, this wiki software whereby readers themselves could contribute, and that sort of side project completely took over. So this is, as I say, a major player, a kind of a monument, landmark on the internet landscape, and it's present in our classes whether we like it or not. Students are using Wikipedia. We're using Wikipedia too, of course. But students are using Wikipedia as inevitably their first line of research, of finding out something, if only again via search engines such as Google. You know, they want to know, I don't know, who Carlos Menem is or something like that, or what is XYZ. It doesn't matter. They first go to the internet, stick it in Google. The first hit that comes up is Wikipedia. Now, of course, there's lots of debates about the relationship between Wikipedia and education, the ways in which we can or cannot, should or should not use or acknowledge Wikipedia. I'm going to run through those a little quickly then spend the rest of my time to say the ways in which I've been using Wikipedia in the classroom and helping students contribute to it and establishing, I suppose, opening up the classroom, I think, to what is, again, I suggested is the largest open access, and the largest and most successful open access education and knowledge project that exists at present. So the debate around Wikipedia and its relationship to education often turn around two particular questions. One, whether or not we should allow students to quote the site, how reliable it is, and then two, more recently perhaps, should academics contribute to it? And the help, and therefore, in some ways, to legitimate it. I just say also, my stance is not to praise or to condemn Wikipedia. There are lots of, it has lots of potential, there are lots of positive things about it, there are plenty of negative things about it. And so if you feel I'm not stressing off the negative things, I'm happy to do that. Or if at some stage you feel I'm not stressing off the positive things, I'm happy to do that. I guess my point is also that people actually, students perhaps in particular, but not just students, are always dealing with Wikipedia, but often don't really understand it, because they don't understand how it's put together, how it works, what the principles of selection are, that there are principles of selection, for instance. And essentially, the only way to understand how Wikipedia is to contribute to it. So it's there. It's one of the most popular sites. It's certainly the most important. It's the most important knowledge resource, probably in some sense, and certainly in terms of size and scope, popularity and readership of any other. But the vast majority of people who read it don't understand how it works. And more importantly, I think for students, students are unable to evaluate it very well, to evaluate the kind of knowledge that it provides. So I guess the first impulse about this was, okay, students are using Wikipedia, we've got to deal with Wikipedia, it's there. How are we going to get students to understand how best to use Wikipedia, how to use it well, and how to try and minimize the kind of problems that it can provide? And that the best way of doing that is getting them to contribute to it. Of course, there's a slight sort of trick. That the one, if they're writing on Wikipedia, then the one source they can't use is Wikipedia itself, because they're contributing to that source. Okay, so but these two questions: should students quote the site? Should professors contribute to it? I've got a few quotations, sort of for and against. Here's somebody writing a stand against Wikipedia: as educators, we're in the business of reducing the dissemination of misinformation. Even though Wikipedia may have some value, it is not itself an appropriate source for facilitation. The notion that Wikipedia is simply misinformation. The interesting thing, of course, is that Wikipedia itself establishes that it's not a source for citation. Again, you can on Wikipedia, you cannot cite the site itself. You can't cite other encyclopedias or tertiary sources, but it's this kind of notion. Even though Wikipedia may have some value, it's not itself an appropriate source of citation that leads sometimes more or less official pronouncements by departments or universities to say the classroom is a no-go zone for Wikipedia, as if they can control the browsing habits of their 18, 19, 20-year-old charges. This, I think, is a much more nuanced and helpful response, however. Teachers have little more to fear from students starting with Wikipedia from their starting with most basic other reference sources. They have a lot to fear if students stop there. In other words, the notion that it is a first resort of reference, I mean, it is. And it is for almost everyone I know. It is for me. Again, yesterday I mentioned that Carlos Menem, because last night I was thinking, does Carlos Menem have the former president of Argentina, does he have an accent or not have an accent? So I stuck it into Google, the first result was Wikipedia, and they say it doesn't, and I was happy enough with that, right? But the point is, as a first resort, it's fine. But if it becomes the last resort, that's when you've got a problem. You've got to enable students to use it and to use Wikipedia, to know how to move on from Wikipedia, to understand when a Wikipedia article enables you to move on, when it has the sources that they can then follow up with, and when it doesn't. So again, a first resort rather than a last resort. Then, as far as the question is whether or not professors, academics should contribute to it, I mean, here you've got a sort of rather gung-ho manifesto. Some guy, I propose that all academics with research specialities, no matter how arcane, enroll as identifiable editors of Wikipedia. Kind of Wikipedia becomes an outgrowth of the university, or I don't know, even a sort of part of a professional service or something like that. On the other hand, you've got a rather different point of view here. Absurdity upon absurdity, self-appointed pundits who have no scientific competence whatever, casting assertions upon precise and pertinent remarks by experts on the field. That's some guy, a scientist, I believe, who did start to edit Wikipedia a little bit and found it an unedifying experience. The interesting thing is the kind of strange thing, again, is that this project, Wikipedia, which is essentially an educational project in just about any form or way that you want to define the notion of education, has had such bad relationships with official institutional education. And it works both ways. The people on Wikipedia, people who run Wikipedia, are immensely skeptical of academics, who, precisely for this kind of attitude, who come in and say, look, I'm a professor, I know better than you. And in fact, they are much more rigorous in that sense on Wikipedia, because they want to say, look, you know, I mean, you can't just rely on your qualifications and credentials here. You know, you need to make an argument. And the problem is that these are people who, often the academics who you know, engage with Wikipedia in some way, aren't used to making arguments which aren't based on their own personal ethos and their personal qualifications. And Wikipedia demands that of you quite rigorously. So, the problem is the students on the whole do stop with Wikipedia. But this isn't Wikipedia's problem. Again, Wikipedia tells its readers not to do that. The problem is with us. We've allowed a situation to arise, partly by ignoring this elephant in the room, I think, in which students find this a useful, convenient, convincing shortcut, essentially, to knowledge. It is, in a sense, I guess, semi-scholarly. It's like any encyclopedia in this. It's a shortcut that relies on scholarship, but doesn't contribute to it. Again, Wikipedia itself, it's one of its founding principles, that it is not a place for what it calls original research. So this can cause sort of interesting problems, even practical ones. So, for instance, this semester, again, another of the courses that I'm teaching is on Chicano Latino literature in the United States and Canada. Well, we have one token Canadian. And that token Canadian lives in Vancouver, in fact, and writes at the moment. What the students have to do in my class is to write or edit and upgrade Wikipedia articles. If there's no article on that particular topic, they have to create it. If there is an article, they have to improve it. The topics are all either the authors that we're studying or the books that we're studying. So the focus of the course remains the literature that we're reading. I mean, this isn't a course on Wikipedia. This is, of course, the used Wikipedia that has Wikipedia as an assignment. But it is, you know, what we do on most, you know, Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, is we talk about the books we're reading. We talk about Chicano Latino literature. We talk about the Chicano Latino experience. We talk about whatever. We don't endlessly, self-reflexively talk about Wikipedia. We have a few Wikipedia days in which we sort of bring ourselves up to date with what's going on. But again, this is not a course. These are not courses about Wikipedia. They're about Latin American literature, culture, history, and politics, the things that teach. But one group of these students, they were writing the article, which they created from scratch, on this author, Carmen Rodriguez, who lives here in Vancouver. And they showed immense initiative. They got in touch with this woman and said, look, we're writing your Wikipedia article. We're reading your book in our class at UBC. We're writing your Wikipedia article. First of all, you know, do you have, I don't know, like cuttings and newspaper information and stuff about you know, what you've been up to, what you've been doing, reviews and so on. And can we meet you? We'd like to interview you. So a couple of weeks ago, they met up with this woman and had a 3-hour interview with her. Took photographs which could go up and so on and so forth. Recorded the whole thing digitally, and then they came to me and said, "Okay, can we use this stuff?" And the answer is no. Because what they've done is, well, in Wikipedia parlance, is original research. This is stuff that other people can't check, right? There's no way in which other people can gain access to the same sources. Now, at the moment, I'm looking with Brian as well. I'm thinking maybe the thing is to actually just get this sound file and put it up on the web somewhere, right? To make it available, but then, I mean, so we're moving it in other kind of interesting ways towards kind of open access too. But again, but it's part of the open access ethos, I suppose, of Wikipedia is that original private research is not a valid source for the material that you put on Wikipedia. So it relies on scholarship, but in that sense, it doesn't contribute to it. Which is kind of interesting. It's a synthesis in the way that encyclopedias are a synthesis. Again, you know, my point here is essentially we have to deal with Wikipedia. We can't ignore it. Pretend it doesn't exist. Try to some sort of futile gestures of banning it. But likewise, Wikipedia has to deal with us whether it likes it or not. Despite the hostility and suspicion that often Wikipedia and Wikipedia editors show towards. Academics, they realize that you know they depend upon the kind of things that the kind of research that academics do, because again they're not a site for the production of knowledge, but for the synthesis and dissemination of knowledge. So the question is rather than mutual disdain, if there's a way of doing positive engagement. Again, this is a quotation from me, if you like, but the more universities engage with Wikipedia, the more they realize they can do so without necessarily dropping the high standards of research and academic rigor. It's also their duty to safeguard, and the more they benefit not only their own students, but also the public good. I'm going to say a few things about the notion of the high standards of research and academic rigor and how those are how those can be enhanced and maintained and enhanced in Wikipedia in a little moment. I also thought, another thing that I do in the first week, by the way, is I changed the name of this building. I mean, what's the difference in a learning center and a library? I don't understand it. This is just, this is bizarre. The only difference, it seems to me, is that there are fewer librarians in a learning center. So I'd call this a library once more and hire more librarians. Because students are losing basic research skills. Again, the sort of knee-jerk response to this is to blame sites such as Wikipedia. That's actually not the case. I want to suggest they're enhanced, not degraded by Wikipedia. Or they can be enhanced, not degraded by Wikipedia if Wikipedia is knowingly and consciously integrated into what we do. But for instance, where the first class that I did this Wikipedia project with last semester, at the end of the class, one of the students wrote me an email saying, I'm graduating this year, this is the end of my fourth year, this is the first class in which I had to go to the library. As a political science major. But, I mean, I was like, I don't know, my sort of jaw dropped about that, you know? Or even just last night as well, another student, one of the things in the current project, which I'll, again, as quickly as possible, I'll show you in a minute, is that I've asked students to establish bibliographies early on. This is also a question of getting, making sure that they have reputable and reliable sources and so on. And tell them to go out and get them, interlibrary loan them if necessary. Again, these are, students are using, forced to use things like interlibrary loan if the books aren't here. They don't realize it till late. Last semester, they didn't realize that till late on in the process. So this semester, I'm trying to teach that lesson early on. But this is not even just about that. It's about, so a student said the book wasn't in the library, it was taken out. So I said, okay, but what you do about this is you recall it. She said, well, I can't recall it. They have it out till April. I said, well, no, the way the library works is that if you recall it, you know, there's sort of basic ways in which the libraries function that students are unaware of, but through the Wikipedia exercise, ironically, they get to learn. Oh yeah.
We haven't done a good job of branding it, so I would like to think that person has been in the library, but maybe not physically.
Oh well, I'm sure. I mean, they've been on the databases. I'm sure. But I'm trying to emphasize. Obviously, these things depend somewhat on your field, but certainly in my field, there are books. And again, like Google Books is very useful, but it doesn't substitute for actually having the thing in front of you. You know, they have to like go to a shelf and find. I mean, this is what I say. I say there's this glass building over in that direction. You probably pass it every single day. You're going to have to enter it for that. So at the same time that universities become these sort of neoliberal enterprises, sort of glorying in catchphrases and marketing speak of learning centers and so on and so forth, in actual fact, ironically, the actual technological processes that they're trying badly to mimic offer the possibilities for a revitalization of often the traditional technologies of libraries and technologies just like any other. Of knowledge production, dissemination, and maintenance. Okay, well, I've got like 3 minutes now, let's see.
You can go longer. It's just.
We should. I thought I was only going to talk for a bit. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's find where I put Firefox. It's disappeared. Okay. So this is the project that I did last semester. It was called Murder, Madness, and Mayhem. It was about dictator novels. I start off with a few quotations. One from a student: over the course of the last few months, I've learned so much about writing I cannot even express, and it shows. I mean, this is another thing. I mean, I've been stressing, perhaps because I'm in a learning center / library, I've been stressing the research aspects of this assignment. I mean, this is also a writing intensive assignment. In order to get to basically the idea is that they get these articles to what's called featured article status, which is the pinnacle of Wikipedia. 0.01% of Wikipedia articles are a featured article. You have to go through a whole series of peer reviewed, in which their work is read with far more thoroughness and rigor than is read at any other time. While they're in the university. In order to reach that kind of status, I reckon you need to at least 1,000 revisions of your article. So essentially, there was one article that they wrote last semester had been through 1,200 revisions. So they're learning. The writing is rewriting, is copy editing, is going back, is reinserting. Under the pressure and guidance and comments of other Wikipedia editors out there, you know, as part of their engagement with the notion of a public with other people there. But meanwhile, there's this guy called Gregory Coes who says he'll no longer allow his daughters to consider attending the University of British Columbia so long as I'm paid to teach here. So, you know, the Wikipedia, it does generate a bit of controversy. Here we are. So this is this is essentially the final tally of what we did last semester. Three of these articles, El Señor Presidente, which didn't exist at the time that the course started. We created it. I created it in class. It was a one-sentence article. I don't know why things have. So this is the article. It's about a book by a Nobel Prize winning Guatemalan novelist, El Señor. His name is Miguel Ángel Historias, El Señor Presidente. The students here, I mean, you'll see how many sort of pages long it is. You see, we go back down to the sort of copious documentation. Maybe somebody here. I've got an idea. They sort of return to the reference library and librarians various times. I tell the students make friends with a reference librarian until one of them said, well, you know, there's a really good Wikipedia page on this, and the students said, we wrote it. We're looking for more sources. So essentially they've got here. They've cited everything. Essentially everything in English, which has been published on this on this novel. Where are we? Here, okay. So three of these got to be a featured article, which means that they can also be on the main page. This is what this is what the Wikipedia main page looked like. Oh, here we are on the 5th of whenever it was, the 5th of May of this year. El Señor Presidente was today's featured article, so that was when we were all very pleased and proud of ourselves. Three of them made it to, okay, we don't want that, to featured article, and the other eight made it to good article, which is not quite the same. But it's another kind of step and a stage. About 0.1% of Wikipedia articles are good articles. This is the current project, north of the Rio Grande. We don't have any featured articles yet. We don't have any good articles yet. But we're working on it. All right, I'll stop there. Well, actually, this time I am, and I'm lagging a little. I feel a little bit bad. I said that I'd do the article on Chicano literature here, and that sort of be a little model. We're also in a kind of, I mean, this isn't the only, there are other universities, other classes, other professors who've tried to use Wikipedia. The one last semester was important because it was the first time that any such educational project had got a featured article. On Wikipedia, it was very exciting, and so on and so forth. We're in a sort of competition, informally, with a group. It's a high school group, in fact, in North Carolina, who are doing articles on biology topics, and they're taking a similar kind of model. They're doing it year round, but we made a little sort of bet amongst ourselves about who would get to a featured article first, and so on and so forth. Anyways, part of it, the two teachers, me and their biology teacher, also said that we'd contribute an article. So this is my article, but it's still lacking somewhat. I'm good on the 16th century, and then it kind of stops at the moment. But so by the end of the semester, hopefully my article will be okay as well. Well, of course, one of the things, these aren't signed articles, right? I mean, but if you want, I mean, this is part of sort of the back thing of the backstage of Wikipedia. You've got any wiki, you've got this little button up here which says history. And you can see everyone who's contributed to it. But this is one of the things, this is always a collaborative project. This is always collaborative learning. So I'm J.B. Murray, and you see I'm the sort of major contributor. But you see also that D. Tiff, actually that's one of my students, decided that she'd come in and add a few things. And then you'll see that this is a completely anonymous person. This is just an IP address, 209.184.116.50. Also came in and decided that he or she would add something. So, I mean, and this happens with the students' articles too, right? That there's this sense that other people can come in and contribute, and they have to work with other people.
And when you click on that, have you introduced yourself to the community in any way? And some authors appear to have written out their own stories.
Yeah, well, I have a little page. You can have. I mean, there's this is. This is my sort of homepage. This is me, in which I tell people about, I say who I am, and I tell people about this project and other various things. I tell people that I can speak Spanish and so on. Where are we? But you don't have to do that. I mean, you can contribute anonymously. Again, so I'm sort of more interested in what the students do. Some of the students. I've lost the back button here, I notice. So some of the students have told people who they are, and this is one who goes by the name of exclamation point, but decided not to say very much. How can I give it? we want to... But others decided not to. I mean, really, that's up to them. Also, the names they choose. Some of them are, this one's Valerie Reynard, but this one's Saucy Boy. And sometimes it gets a little confusing to me, but I think that's okay, because I sort of forget to relate who is. The students in my class on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, which of you is, it took me a while to figure out who exclamation point was, actually, in the class. But that's fine too. They're also generating to some extent their own personas, both by what they choose to say about each other themselves, how they choose to name themselves, how they choose to present themselves, or whatever.
Can I go back to the beginning of your conversation?
Go ahead.
Uh-huh. And it gives me all kinds of capacity. So for $150 a year, I get infinite numbers of blogs, and I have like 25 of them all interlinked and everything. At the same time, the district that I work in has paid $1.5 million to the Microsoft Corporation to create some kind of online presence for every teacher and student.
It's a scandal. It's a complete scandal.
And it's all about access. Nobody has access to anybody else. So I'm really interested, I'm with you completely, except you're bad on
I think it's a challenge. I mean, there are these changes taking place. I mean, Wikipedia, of course, is free. But various people have tried to figure out how much it would cost to make Wikipedia, and there are various different assessments. But basically, it's billions of dollars. Right? The amount of time that goes into it, which is contributed at the moment totally by volunteers. Without relying on advertising or anything like that, and which is but possible in a way that never would have been possible before. I mean, I think the things is that these kind of technologies must make us rethink the ways in which we thought about the financing, the proprieties, the boundaries, and the limits of education. And yeah, no, some people are going to have to, and that includes, you know, professors, that includes people like my friend Brian over there who works in education technology, are going to have to think about ways in which, you know, well, how do we justify what we do? How do we, you know, what are we doing? What is our role? What is our responsibility to our students, to whatever, our employer, to the public at large and so on? How do we conceive of that public? How do we conceive the role of the university? I mean, I think there's a fundamental challenge to university as to what its role is in the 21st century. And essentially the university's response to that challenge has been deeply disappointing on almost every single level. But there are currents in the open access movement and the kind of things that you're doing, the kind of things that today is about, I think glimmers of hope, but more than just glimmers. Again, like we can point to things like Wikipedia. We've all this. I've been insufficiently negative about Wikipedia, but it shows a certain kind of potential for rethinking the way in which knowledge is produced and shared and disseminated today. And in some sense, the old rules are gone or have to be rethought or re-justified.
Understood that when I go to university and I have professors who are hopefully going to provoke me, make me do things I wouldn't do otherwise, critique me, put me in a context with social peers where I'm going to learn from them as well, and push me someplace I need to go, and then hopefully give me the feedback that's going to, and then tell me at the end, give me that accreditation that said, you know, this person who has accomplished this suggests that I've reached this level of competency. You're not paying for the content, you're paying essentially for the experience, for the context, and then unfortunately, because it is a bit crass, but for the accreditation.
I mean, the Microsoft Corporation believes that if you give a child a computer, that's all they need. And the offense, and they don't need a teacher. So you're saying you've got teachers.
I like to think I do a bit of teaching, you know? I mean, that I add something too.
Just a quick one, this is probably the last one. I was just curious how you evaluate this kind of
thing. Oh! Well, it's got a little bit more complicated, but essentially, if they get a featured article, they get an A+. So, essentially, Wikipedia evaluates them. Or rather, to put it a different way, they're evaluated by their ability to reach a concrete, real-world goal, which is to get their article accepted by the Wikipedia community as one of the best 0.01% of articles. So actually, it's very simple.
Okay, well, we're about at our time today, so if you could join me in thanking Dr. John Beasley-Murray.
Thank you.
And on behalf of the library, we have a small token of our appreciation for you coming here today.
Thank you very much indeed.
No, you say it's just a small token.
Okay, thank you very much.